my blood hath been too cold and temperate, alas, to stir at these indignities. And you have found me, for accordingly you tread upon my patience.
But be sure, I will from henceforth rather be myself, mighty and to be feared, than my condition, which hath been smooth as oil, soft as young dove, and therefore lost that title of respect which the proud soul ne'er pays but to the proud.
Our house, our sovereign liege, little deserves the scourge of greatness to be used on it. That same greatness, too, which our own hands have helped to make so portly.
Lord, what's that? Get thee gone! For I do see danger and disobedience in thine eye. Oh, sir, your presence is too bold and peremptory, and majesty might never yet endure the moody frontier of a servant brow. You have good leave to leave us. When we need your use and counsel, we shall send for you. You were about to speak.
Here, my lord. Those prisoners in your highness' name demanded, which Harry Percy here at Holden took, were, as he says, not with such strength denied as is delivered to your majesty. Either envy, therefore, or misprision is guilty of this fault, and not my son.
My liege, I did deny no prisoners. But I remember when the fight was done, when I was dry with rage and extreme toil, breathless and faint, leaning upon my sword, came there a certain lord, neat and trimly dressed, fresh as a bridegroom, and his chin new reaped showed like a stubble land at harvest home. He was perfumed like a milliner. And twixt his finger and his thumb he held a pouncet box, which ever and anon he gave his nose and took away again, who therewith angry when it next came there, took it in snuff. And still he smiled and talked. And as the soldiers bore dead bodies by, he called them untaught names. Unmannerly to bring a slovenly, unhandsome course betwixt the wind and his nobility. With many holiday and lady terms, he questioned me. Amongst the rest, demanded my prisoners in your majesty's behalf. I then, all smarting with my wounds being cold, to be so pestered with a popinjay out of my grief and my impatience, answered neglectingly, I know not what. He should or he should not. For he made me mad. To see him shine so brisk and smell so sweet and talk so like a waiting gentlewoman of guns and drums and wounds. God save the mark. And telling me the sovereignest thing on earth was a palmacete for an inward brew. And that it was great pity, so it was, this villainous saltpeter should be digged out of the bowels of the harmless earth, which many a good tall fellow had destroyed so cowardly. And but for these vile guns, he would himself have been a soldier. This bald, unjointed chat of his, my lord, I answered indirectly. As I said, and I beseech you, let not his report come current for an accusation betwixt my love and your high majesty.
The circumstance considered, good my lord.
Whate'er Lord Harry Percy then had said to such a person, and in such a place at such a time, and all the rest retold, may reasonably die, and never rise to do him wrong, or any way impeach what then he said. So he unsay it now.
Why, yet he doth deny his prisoners, but with proviso and exception, that we of our own charge shall ransom straight his brother-in-law, the foolish Mortimer, who on my soul hath willfully betrayed the lives of those that he did lead to fight against that great magician, damned Glendower, whose daughter, as we hear, that Mortimer hath lately married. Shall our coffers then be emptied to redeem a traitor home? Shall we buy treason and indent with fears when they have lost and forfeited themselves? No, on the barren mountains let him starve, for I shall never hold that man my friend, whose tongue shall ask me for one penny cost to ransom home revolted Mortimer.
Revolted Mortimer? He never did fall off my sovereign liege, but by the chance of war. To prove that true needs but one tongue for all those wounds, those mouthed wounds which valiantly he took, when on the gentle Severn, Sedgy Bank, in single opposition, hand to hand, he did confound the best part of an hour in changing hardiment with great Glendower. 3 times they breathed, And three times did they drink upon agreement of swift Severn's blood, who then affrighted with their bloody looks, ran fearfully among the trembling reeds and hid his crisp head in the hollow bank, blood stained it with those valiant combatants. Never did base and rotten policy color her working with such deadly wounds. Nor never could the noble Mortimer receive so many, and all willingly. Then let him not be slandered with revolt.
Thou dost belie him, Percy. Thou dost belie him. He never did encounter with Glendower. I tell thee, he durst as well have met the devil alone as owing Glendower for an enemy. Art thou not ashamed?
What, sir? Henceforth, let me not hear you speak of Mortimer.
Send me your prisoners with the speediest means, or you shall hear in such a kind from me as will displease you. My Lord Northumberland, we license your departure with your son. Send us your prisoners, or you will hear of it.
And if the devil come and roar for them, I will not send them. I will after straight and tell him, for I will ease my heart, albeit I make a hazard of my head.
What? Drunk with color? Stay, pause a while. Here comes your uncle.
Speak of Mortimer. Zeus, I will speak of him. And let my soul want mercy if I do not join with him. Dead. On his part, I'll empty all these veins and shed my dear blood drop by drop in the dust. But I will lift the noble Mortimer as high in the air as this unthankful king, as this ingrate and cankered Bolingbroke.
Brother, the king has made your nephew mad.
Who struck this heat up after I was gone?
He will, forsooth, have all my prisoners. When I urged the ransom once again of my wife's brother, then his cheek looked pale. And on my face he turned an eye of death, trembling even at the name of Mortimer.
I cannot blame him. Was not he proclaimed by Richard the dead is the next of blood? Peace, cousin, say no more. And now I will unclasp a secret book. And to a quick conceiving discontent, I'll read you matter deep and dangerous, as full of peril and adventurous spirit as to walk a current roaring loud on the unsteadfast footing of a spear.
If he fall in, good night, or sink or swim. Send danger from the east unto the west, so honor cross it from the north to south, and let them grapple. Oh, the blood more stirs to rouse a lion than to start a hare.
The vision of some great exploit drives him beyond the bounds of patience.
By heaven. Methinks it were an easy leap to pluck bright honor from the pale-faced moon, or dive into the bottom of the deep where other man could never touch the ground and pluck up drowned honor by the locks. So he that doth redeem her thence might wear without carrival all her dignities. But out upon this, fixed fellowship.
He apprehends a world of figures here, but not the form of what he should attend. Cousin, give me audience for a while.
Oh, I cry in mercy.
Those same noble Scots that are your prisoners.
I'll keep them all. By God, he shall not have a Scot of them. No, if a Scot should save his soul, he shall not. I'll keep them by this hand.
Start away and lend no ear unto my purposes. Those prisoners you shall keep.
Nay, I will. That's flat. He said he would not ransom Mortimer. Forbade my tongue to speak of Mortimer. But I will find him when he lies asleep. And in his ear I'll holler, Mortimer! Nay, I'll have a starling so be taught to speak nothing but Mortimer. And give it him to keep his anger still in motion.
Hear you, cousin, a word.
All studies here I solemnly devise him out of gall and pinch this Bolingbroke.
And that same sword and buckler, Prince of Wales. But that his father loves him not and would be glad he met with some mischance and have him poisoned with a pot of ale. There you are, kinsman. I'll speak to you when you have better temper to attend.
Why, what a wasp-stung and impatient fool art thou! To break into this woman's mood, tying thine ear to no tongue but thine own.
Why, look you, I am whipped and scourged with rods, nettled and stung with pismires when I hear of this vile politician, Bolingbroke. In Richard's time, what do you call the place? Take upon it, it's in Gloucestershire. It was where the madcap duke his uncle kept. His uncle York! When I first bowed mine ear to this king of smiles, this Bolingbroke. Splag! When you and he came back from Ravenspur.
At Berkeley Castle.
Oh, you say true. Why, what a candy deal of courtesy this fawning greyhound vended proper me. Look when his infant fortune came to age, and gentle Harry Percy, and kind cousin. How the devil takes such cousiners! God forgive me. Good uncle, tell your tale.
I have done. No, if you've not, to it again.
We will stay your leisure.
I have done it, Faith!
And once more, it's your Scottish prisoners. Deliver them out without their ransoms straight. And make the Douglas son your only mean for powers in Scotland, which for divers reasons, which I shall send you written, be assured, shall easily be granted. Now you, my lord, your son in Scotland being thus employed, shall secretly into the bosom creep of that same noble prelate, the Archbishop of York, is not true, who bears hard his brother's death at Bristow, the Lord Scroope. I speak not this in estimation, as what I think might be, but what I know is ruminated, plotted, and set down, and only stays but to behold the face of that occasion that shall bring it on.
I smell it. Upon my life, it will do well.
Before the game is afoot, thou still let's
slip my head cannot choose but be a noble plot. And then the power of Scotland and of York to join with Mortimer.
And so they shall.
Upon my life, it is exceedingly well aimed.
It is no little reason but to speed, to save our heads by raising of a head.
For bear ourselves as even as we can, the king will always think him in our debt, think we think ourselves unsatisfied till he has found a time to pay us home. And see already how he doth begin to make us strangers to his looks of love.
He does, he does.
We will be revenged upon him.
Cousin, farewell. No further go in this than I, by letters, shall direct your course. When time is ripe, which will be suddenly, I'll see you to Glendale and Lord Mortimer, where you and Douglas and our powers at once, as I will fashion it, shall happily meet to bear our fortunes in our own strong arms, which now we hold at much uncertainty.
Farewell, good brother. You shall thrive, I trust.
Uncle,
adieu. Oh, let the hours be short till fields and blows and groans applaud our sport.